When you buy a new house, you might say,
shut the front door.
Winning.
No, seriously, shut the front door. We own this house now.
But you actually need to say,
like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
That's right. The local State Farm agent is there to help you choose the coverage you need.
Welcome to my crib. No one says that anymore, but I don't care.
So, just remember, like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
State Farm, Bloomington, Illinois.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
Start clean with Clorox, because Clorox delivers a powerful clean every time. Because messes happen. Because... I got the charcoal mask. Great, because why would I put that on my face when I could drop it in my sink? This is what I get for multitasking. Ugh, why is charcoal so sticky?
Hello?
Hey, Janice. I am so sorry. I thought I was on mute. No, we don't need to reschedule. I'll just stay off camera. Ooh, yeah, that happens. So start clean with Clorox. Use Clorox products as directed.
Book Sports. I am your host, Ryan Blackburn, at NBA Blackburn on Twitter. Part of the Mile High Sports Podcast Network, and I am joined here by my guy, Swipa. It is weekends with Swipa time here. We're going live on the Twitter app as well, so anybody that's tuning in there, really appreciate you stopping by. Drop some comments in the chat. Let's see where you're at. Let's see what you're doing. Thank you so much for tuning in. Swipa, how you doing, my guy, on this Sunday?
I'm living, bro. It's been a great day. Enjoying this day. It's been a down day for me. I'm doing laundry and cleaning the house today, and my dog's sunbathing right now. No cats today. I'm at my house. Yesterday was nice. I work a lot during the week. I only had one show to do yesterday. It was great. And then today I got one show to do today, and then tomorrow right back at it, and then I have like three a day.
Am I going to have to bring the fucking energy today? What's going on, man?
It's great. I feel wonderful. This is me just dissecting. I'm just dissecting how my day's been and just processing with you all, my community. But it's been a really good day. I'm enjoying it. The sun's out. Folks are healthy. You know, hope it's a great day for everybody around the world. You know,
everybody loves Sundays. Like, obviously, March Madness is going on, so I know a lot of people have their eyes on that. I know the CU Marquette game has been insane. Folks in the chat, let us know on the updates on that game. I know I am very excited to see who wins that one. I pick CU in my home family bracket, so I'm excited to see where that goes. But we are not here to chat about March Madness. If it comes up, it comes up. We are here to chat about the Denver Nuggets and how dominant they have been. Now 14-2 in their 16 games since the All-Star break have just been unbelievable, Swipa. Not necessarily perfect, because there have been some things to kind of nitpick. There have been some things to sort of like head scratching a little bit, stuff within the rotation. But last night, Denver wins again. It was pretty shaky towards the end, but 114-111 against the Portland Trailblazers. We'll start with that in the first segment. We'll talk about Denver peaking in the second segment, and then we will go over this homestand in the third segment of time. Should be a lot of fun, but where are you going to start with the Portland-Denver game?
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, Denver has been taking care of business, and, you know, I figured that with this game coming up, this will be an opportune rest time for Jokic and for Murray. You know, Portland was starting a bunch of rookies, and I think a lot of people, some people have suspected, at least, that they were going to take their foot off the gas post All-Star break. I know I was obviously very consistent about not having them. They don't have the opportunity to do that this year, given where they want to end up in the standings. And two, they don't want to fall. So, like, if you don't want to fall. But what's funny is the Nuggets are still coasting. they just do it for quarters at a time. And then at the end of the game, they're like, all right, well, let's close the game out. And I think that's the part, kind of how they've been taking it so far. So yesterday was a really good game. Very aggressive Aaron Gordon yesterday. I tweeted last night, it looks like Orlando Magic Aaron Gordon. You know, he was pummeling him to the free throw line. He was getting to the basket. His defense was excellent yesterday. Him and KCP, I think, continue to make their argument that they should be all defense defenders this year. I doubt both make it. I doubt maybe even KCP makes it at this point, the way that I'm kind of hearing the guard share is going to work in the voting, but which I think is going to be an absolute travesty. So the Nuggets are going to have another top three playoff defense and another, you know, top 10 defense in the regular season with no all defense players, which is always interesting. But 22 and 12. He had 12 and 10 at halftime yesterday. I believe that's the second time for Statsman, I believe, on Twitter. I believe that's the second time in his career he's had a double-double at the half. And then, obviously, Michael Porter Jr. yesterday, just 12 points, 9 rebounds. He was 5 of 12 from the field.
Only he was had bad in the first half, man.
It was one shot in the first quarter, and then I think two shots in the first half for the most part, something around there, maybe a little bit more.
Uninvolved and kind of willing to be uninvolved, I would say.
Yeah, I feel like Porter, at some point, he kind of settled into the fact that Reggie was going to kind of take up a boatload of the usage, and he just didn't feel like he kind of – I don't think he intentionally, like, just detached, but I think the game plan, he just kind of detached because of it. But Christian Brown was incredible yesterday. Him and Peyton Watson off the bench, I think, are going to be really special come playoff time. And I think, funny enough, Christian Brown's aggressiveness, 17, 8, and 12 – on 7 of 15 from the field and a plus 5 in that game.
He was great.
Christian is showing that there's a little bit of a bag to his game, and I think some versatility that he doesn't get to show often. But, man, if he can keep being this aggressive, confident, shooting from the three-point line, getting to the rim, rebounding, that changes a lot of the conversation, I think, for the Denver Nuggets bench unit.
Let's stick on Christian Brown here because that was my big takeaway for sure. Just the way that he played and the way that he attacked and the level of aggressiveness that you get without Jokic, without Murray. And then with Porter kind of like fading into the background a little bit, not necessarily as aggressive as you would want him to be in these situations, that continues to happen without Jokic for the most part. Not necessarily all his fault, but not necessarily like he's not completely without blame on that either. But you needed guys to step up. And with Christian Brown, he played 36 minutes off the bench last night. Like, that's a lot. That's a lot of time. Basically, like, playing the entire time outside of the first 6 minutes of each of the first and third quarter. And his energy and his activity was so good. Like, 3 steals, 2 blocks, 10 rebounds. The way that you provide that level of energy and intensity, that is what you're supposed to do as a second unit guy. But it's also, like, the way that he was getting to his shots and the way that he was being aggressive within his role, that was shocking to me. I was not ready for that. And I'm very happy with the way that he played. He showed me something for sure last night with some of the moves that he was making. Like the floater that he had, I think, in the second quarter.
Yeah, that was nice. That was dirty.
Pick and roll, late clock situation. Like, you need to get up a shot, but you need to get up one that's like relatively effective.
Right.
And early in the season, I made this point to Matt Moore earlier today. Like, earlier in the season, that is a drive into nowhere. That's a drive into nowhere where he just tries to draw contact. He tries to get to the rim and kind of throws up a weird layup. This one, like, this was effective and efficient and controlled. And that is the, like that's the Christian Brown that Denver needs, is the one that's in control of what he's doing.
Yeah. I think this is what, which is why I think for young players, you go off sample sizes that are large. Remember in the summer, we were saying that, I think because of Bruce Brown's department, that we needed a player to come off the bench, and ideally it would be Christian Brown that was going to have some of the finishing ability that Bruce Brown left with, and then even some of the playmaking towards the rim. And I think Christian is just taking a while to get here. Early in the season, wasn't good. He was shooting well, but he wasn't playing good basketball. Defensively, he was even falling behind a little bit just because I think he was thinking too much. You know, obviously second-year player, and then you kind of seen Peyton, you know, throughout the year, just kind of gone up, had some, you know, little down moments here and there, but gone up. Like I said, he hadn't played consistently since his senior year of high school. So I think for Christian, this is just kind of him figuring out his game and rounding out his game. He's been really good lately, especially since they came back from All-Star break. He's been good. And I think if he's going to be this aggressive, and I think a lot of this too is like, you know, I was listening, because you know, I always listen to the opposing broadcast.
Sure.
I always want to hear what they have to say about the Nuggets, about their team. You know, it's just always good to get insider information. And what I loved is, the way they were talking about Christian and Peyton, they were like, man, the Nuggets are just so deep coming off the bench because they have these two great athletes, and both of them are defensive aces. And I think that really lends itself to why the Nuggets have a really good shot of surprising people with how good their bench is going to be in playoff time, because it's not going to be Jamal Murray, you know, Justin Holiday, Christian Peyton, and Zeke, but you're going to put Aaron Gordon in one of those spots, maybe KCP or Michael Porter Jr. with Jamal. That's right. Going to really help them to make some real improvements, you know?
Oh, there's no doubt. And just we'll get into more of like how that playoff rotation is going to kind of pan itself out in the second segment, because I do think that there is some there's some stuff there that we're going to have to talk about, especially with Reggie and especially with just the way that some of these lineups kind of go. And you, I know you've got some takes on Peyton, but I'm curious. So Colin Gillespie has a good game. Reggie Jackson, Reggie still led the team with 23 points, and credit to him where credit is due. Was the team better when Reggie was on the floor? No, but he had 23 points on 12 shots and got to the free throw line 11 times. Like, that was impressive. And the way that he handled himself with that was really good. And like stepping up where Jamal would need to step up in that situation. DeAndre Jordan was plus 10 in his 20 minutes. He gave some pretty solid minutes for Denver, I thought. Like, those guys, once again, stepping up just to get Denver a win was really, really important for Denver trying to fight for the one seed.
Yeah, and look, Reggie is just, you know, I think everyone kind of knows that Reggie's the thing that the Nuggets feel like they need most. You know, need his playmaking, they need his pop scoring, but it's just his defense and his decision-making that can kind of oscillate a lot. And I think, if I'm not mistaken, if I look up Reggie Jackson's game log, how many times has he been double-digit points since the All-Star break, right? I want to say
it's probably like two.
Yeah, and so I think some of this is just like Reggie had a really good game in a spot that he needed to be a little bit more high usage. You know, he had 5 assists, you know, 3 turnovers. That's still good enough for who they were playing. I think some of this is Reggie Jackson did just enough in order to help the Nuggets win the game. But then on the other end, Reggie also has some really brutal mistakes that could have really cost him some as well. But Reggie played well, you know, give credit to him. I think really this game was his second best since that Heat game he had where he had those 7 straight points. And actually, Ryan, this game was Reggie's first game since the All-Star break with more than 10 points. So, really? Again, that's what I'm saying. For your backup point guard, That's not good enough on large for what he's being asked to do.
Yeah, minutes have kind of oscillated with him. Denver's kind of toying with his role. They've gone away from the Jamal and Reggie lineups as much as possible. And because of that, that has kind of jacked around Reggie's role and the flow of his game. Because most of the time what's happening with him, most of the time what's happening with him is middle of the first quarter to the end of the first quarter he plays, and then he sits. And then he comes back in and plays with Jokic in the middle of the second quarter to when Jamal is ready to come back in. And he actually has 3 to 4 minute stints throughout the game.
Yeah.
And that's if Jamal doesn't just play like for the final 12 minutes of the entire game.
But do you know that during the All-Star, since the All-Star break, he's averaging 6.8 points, 2.8 assists. He's averaging 1.1 turnovers. But he's shooting 37, 27, 70, 77. 37 and 27.
It's not necessarily that it's without merit that the role has gone down, but I try to put myself into his shoes and try to put myself into like a shooter needs rhythm, a scorer needs rhythm, somebody who like when you need a little bit of a leash out there in order to actually just understand the flow of the game, understand how you can impact it best, and like give yourself a little bit of time, like for like that kind of stint that they're going with for him is more for a defensive first guy, somebody who's going to give you like bursts of energy, bursts of.
I think that speaks to the point though, Ryan. That's what they need. That's not what he is though. So if he's going to be on the court, he's not a plus defender. He's not a plus off ball defender.
Yeah.
So you have to score, and you have to score relatively efficiently, because that's what Lou Will is. That's what Lou Will was at his apex. Like, he wasn't going to be a good defender, but he was going to be a bench efficient bench scorer. That was going to give you more upside on the offensive end, and he's not going to be great defensively. The problem is Reggie is not a good enough defender. Yesterday, whenever they didn't have a big in at all, they would take him to the hole. He was getting fouled. We've seen multiple times already since the All-Star break. That's what the teams do. They're going to target that and try to get to the rim. But on the other end, you have to, on the other side of the ball, I don't care who you are. You could be Jamal. You could be Justin. You could be Peyton, whoever. Well, not Peyton and Christian because they play defense. But you cannot shoot 37 and 27 and 77. There is no person on the roster that can do that. Not one person, because I think that's the point. If Reggie, because you're a professional, obviously, and again, I want to be clear here. Reggie has a lot of things. He's done really well in Denver. He's a Colorado kid. Everybody loves him being in Denver. But at the end of the day, if you're going to be the backup point guard for Jamal and you're going to be playing next to Joker, which again, primarily, by the way, Ryan, he plays most of his minutes next to Joker because he's having to take that stint at the end of the first quarter, take the stint at the end of the third quarter, and then he comes out. Jamal goes in the game because Justin goes in now, and now he comes back in the game with Joker. Sure. So you're shooting 37-27 with Joker in primary minutes since the All-Star break. So I think that's, for me, it's just like, I understand that you definitely need to have more of a rhythm and everything else. But at the end of the day, like, you have to make shots if you're not going to be a DeLon Wright or a Dennis Smith Jr. or a whoever, whatever the point guard is that plays really good defense. That's what the Nuggets need. And I think some of this is, and you know, we saw it really in the other game, who they played two games ago, Ryan. Who's their last game against before the Portland game?
They played the Knicks.
And then, like, even that possession where I think him and Jokic were on the empty side pick and roll, and Reggie kept, like, trying to figure out, like, where to position it a little bit. And then he ended up, like, traveling at the baseline and all that. And so I think some of that is just, like, you got to be really, really touch and go and really smart with your decision making, I think, when you're in that role. So that's my biggest thing. It's just, like, I think, obviously, like, you know, want him here. He's a dude that, like, you know, he brings a lot of energy to the locker room. Guys like him and all that stuff. But at the end of the day, bro, like, if you're not going to be a really good defender on this Nuggets team, you have to make shots or you're not in the playoff rotation.
It's understandable. Just one final, like, set of numbers here for you just to kind of counter that.
Yeah.
The way that they have played, he's had a plus minus of, like, this last game he was minus 10. It was without Jokic and Murray, so I don't want to necessarily throw that in there. He's had a game where he's minus 7. He's had another game where he's minus 7. He's had a game where he's minus 2, minus 2, minus 1. And those are the only negative, like, plus minuses that mm-hmm. he's had when he's been on the court. So while I do agree that, like, there are certain things that he has to be better at within his role, the way that Denver has been deploying him, he hasn't been that negatively impactful. Like,
that's not the way it works, though, Ryan. He's playing his minutes next to Joker. So go back to the Knicks game. If you look at the Knicks game, Reggie Jackson finishes that game. He is a plus 7. Jamal Murray is a plus 9 because of that last stint that they had over the course of that fourth quarter. The problem is going into that quarter, it's not like Jamal Murray is in the positive play. And Jamal Murray is also anchoring Justin. That's why people look at Jamal, they're like, oh, his plus minus or his numbers on the court or whatever. Like, Jamal's primary unit he's playing with is Justin Holiday, Peyton Washington, Christian Brown, and Zeke Nagy.
Yeah.
And so people are, like, looking at his efficiency stuff, saying, oh, well, if he was that much better, it's like, I don't know any point guard, honestly, outside of Luka. But even Luka, I know exactly what the conversation would be. Luka doesn't have enough help. He's out there with a mostly defensive unit, and he's stabilizing those minutes for sure. But I think some of this is like, I guess for me, it's like, that's cool. Plus minus is fine. But let me put some of the plus minus stuff. I'm just doing the eye test stuff.
Okay.
Not been good enough.
Yeah, I understand that he has.
That's just in the day. You got to make shots. Not been good enough.
Yeah, swipe. I understand. Like, he has not been great. He has not been great. And, like, the problem is that, like, Denver just doesn't have other options that they can go to. Like, that's just
Apparently the Colin. They again, two small point guards. That makes don't ask me. I know. I get it. That's not we've seen. That's not what Denver works with. They need defenders at that position and longer players. And, you know, both him and Colin are just, you know.
So this is a conversation for the offseason. This is not a conversation for the playoffs right now. Like, they will, like, shorten his role. Like, it's going to happen. Like, I promise you. It is going to happen. And, like, Jamal's going to play 40 minutes, 42 minutes. And Reggie at times will play 6. And then we're going to be complaining about the 6 minutes that Reggie plays next to Joker. And, like, look, if they go 16-4 again and, like, we're complaining about Reggie being a minus in the playoffs, that'll be hilarious. That'll be, like, because, like, the rest of their time has just been so good. So,
I don't know. Yeah, I mean, I get it. I just think we have a little bit of a parting parting agreements here. I just think that, yeah, I think for sure. I think that speaks to Joker, MPJ, AG, KCP, and Jamal, and Peyton and Christian, for sure. Because, again, I think everybody has their role. And I think with the Nuggets, which is why everybody, like, when they look at the Denver Nuggets, say, oh, they just mesh together so perfectly. Because KCP, he defends, he makes shots, he has low usage, and he hustles. MPJ, he finds his open spots. He's a great contested shooter. He's the best spot-up shooter in the NBA. He is a great rebounder, and he's a good defender. He does all those things all in one. AG has a role. If he fills it to perfection. Obviously, Jamal, Jokic, role. Christian, role. Peyton has a role. He's extending his offensive game. Reggie has a role. That's to score and to play make and to not be an absolute negative on defense. He's not been a good positive defender this year. He's been a decent playmaker. I agree. I think that really helps him. But the scoring, it has to be there. So that for me is the thing. It's like no one is exempt. You have a role. I have a role. We have to fulfill our role as well. And if we don't, then that's just what it is. I'm not going to skate by it and pretend it. Because Michael Malone's already brought this up publicly. So that's my whole thing with it. It's like yesterday he played really well for sure. And I don't want to spend too much time on this, but I'm just saying that like overall, the course of this All-Star break, everybody has really fed into it well. And Reggie at times has also fed into it really well. And yesterday he had 23-5, really good efficiency. And I think the Denver Nuggets, they won their minutes in the fourth quarter with him. DeAndre Jordan had 11-8-3 yesterday. Had a fairly good game. You know, had some things that he didn't do super well. But calling off the bench, bro, 11 points, 4-10, 2-4 from three. He was good.
Yeah.
Came in, brought some energy, brought some momentum. Yeah. He was working really well next to Christian Brown. Christian Brown and Colin like the Bash Brothers yesterday. So shout out to everybody, man. Like the Nuggets, they all showed up. They all did their job yesterday. And you can't go wrong with that. You really can't.
No doubt. I mean, look, we're going to have, it's not even really disagreements because I do agree that Reggie's got to play better. I just think that it's going to matter a little bit less than you do. I think that that's where we're at. And it's funny because I've been the guy that's like, hey, they need to add another guy. They need to add another player to their bench. But for me, that was more in the front court. But hey, why don't we take a break? When we come back, we are going to chat about some other aspects of this playoff rotation and maybe some other takes on this past game. Should be very fun. But first, everybody, we're changing the game. You can win some money this season with Superbook Sports, the most trusted name in sports gambling with a direct line to Las Vegas. And now you can use their promo code MILEHIGH and score up to $250 with their first bet bonus. Win or lose, Superbook will match your first bet up to $250 with promo code MILEHIGH. Download the Superbook Sports app, enter that promo code, and you'll get $250 courtesy of Superbook Sports. Visit superbook.com for terms and conditions. Gambling prompt call 1-800-GAMBLER. We'll be right back on Weekends with Swipa.
Whether you're a morning person or a bedtime procrastinator, everyone deserves a mattress that works for their style. And you'll find the best mattress for you at Ashley. The new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley brings you one-of-a-kind body-conforming technology, making every sleep tailored to be your best. The collection also features cool-to-the-touch covers and motion absorption to help minimize sleep disruptions from partners, pets, or kids. Shop the all-new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Are back. Pickaxe and Roll, Ryan Blackburn here. Thank you so much for tuning in on this Sunday afternoon. Joined by my guy Swipo, we just had the Reggie conversation. I'm sure there will be plenty more over the course of these next couple months. This is going to be, I'm sure, a hot button topic for a lot of people. I wonder if Denver would, like, do you think that they would convert Colin Gillespie to a full-time contract and,
no,
like, and cut Flacco or somebody like that?
No.
No?
It's not happening. No.
Okay. No. I just think it's a fair
They're
question.
They're not going to have a backup point guard out behind Reggie. Yeah.
One of the reasons why, though, is like we saw it in this last game. Denver struggles to dribble. They really struggle to dribble and handle ball pressure. And there's definitely a need at some times for somebody to sort of diffuse that. And Colin probably has too many playoff weaknesses in order to really throw him out there on a consistent basis. But hypothetically, if Reggie was to get hurt or Jamal was to get hurt, does Denver just like go full wings and yes. Joker? Is that just how they approach
Justin
it?
Justin Holiday's playing. Yeah, Justin. Yeah. Yeah. You take away that spot. That's exactly what would happen.
Now, who dribbles the ball up the floor?
Both him and Christian Brown.
You think they'll handle it well?
Yeah, I think they'll handle it fine. I think people kind of they overestimate like dribble coverages. Like you're going to struggle sometimes, but yeah, they're both going to bring. All three of them can bring the ball up. Peyton hasn't gotten it robbed. By the way, I just want to be clear about this. When he brought the ball from full court, that hasn't happened. Christian, I don't think it's also happened either. He struggled, had to look pretty all the time. But I do think that those three, all three of them combined, plus, oh, hey, by the way, Aaron Gordon. Now, Aaron Gordon's issue is he over dribbles. But that's not like, it's not like he can't get it across half court and get the spot set. The problem is when Aaron does that, like he did versus the Knicks and it goes out of bounds, that's just Aaron just like, come on, bro. Like, can you just set the play? Please, but I have no issue with that. But Aaron, Justin, and then on top of that too, like if they're gonna do that, then throw it ahead to Porter. Like, and Porter's gonna get his ball half court and get it set. Throw it to Jokic. Jokic is gonna get the ball set. The Nuggets have plenty of ball handlers. They don't have a lot of half court creators. That's the different thing. Now they don't have a lot of that. But I asked, what team has a lot of half court creators? I mean, he got Tyler Hero. They got Terry Rozier, Jimmy Butler. But he also doesn't do that at a super efficient level. Now, the Lakers, they got Spencer Dinwiddie, Austin Reeves, D'Angelo Russell, and LeBron James. So they're in a little bit of different scenario. But most teams don't prioritize. I mean, even the Mavericks got Luka and they got Kyrie. But who else are you giving the ball to for them to create in a half-court set at all? Well, that's the point. They're always going to be on the ball. The Suns going to have Beal and Booker and KD and then, you know, Grayson Allen, I guess. Right. But even at the top of it, it's going to be Cason Wallace, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, J-Dub, and Josh Giddey. So that's four. You know what I mean? But that's good. But like the Timberwolves, they got Nikhil, Conley, Ant, Monte Morris, and then I guess McLaughlin. So five. But two of these dudes aren't playing in the playoffs. So that's three. So the Nuggets, no, they're in a pretty good place.
Yeah, I just – it. One of the things is not just – it's like with the half-court creation especially – it's one of the reasons why you need to keep Reggie engaged. You need to keep him like as somebody who you can go to in one of these situations is because like if Jamal had like, cause he's not going to play 48. Right. And if there is a setup for a team where let's say it's the Timberwolves, for example, you need somebody who can break it down off the dribble and can get into the lane a little bit. Like you can't just set up with the post-ups because like you'll have somebody like hypothetically Carl Anthony Towns gets back, or if it's Kyle Anderson and then with Rudy Gobert rotating over, like you just, those
you
teams
think KCP is a good ball handler?
With the long arms that they've got with as much athleticism as they have, they'll be able to load up and really make it difficult for Joker. If it's stagnant, if it's static, you need somebody who can kind of change.
But when did the Nuggets do that though? I guess is my question. When are they stagnant? Like
when Jamal is off the floor and Jokic is going into the post. And Jokic is just trying to get the ball, whether it's at the elbow or the mid post or wherever. Like, if he is just trying to get it there, and Denver, if they spend 10 seconds trying to get him the ball into that spot on the floor, and those teams are just loading up on him, like, Denver struggles with that. They actually struggled with it against Minnesota previously in this last game. So I think that there is some merit to that, and just in terms of having somebody else who can draw pressure away from Joker on the ball.
I think KCP can do that well enough. He did it at Washington. He's done it since this time this year as well.
Maybe he can.
Well, I think that's the issue, though, Ryan, is I don't think that the Nuggets prioritized that in the offseason, or else they would have made some different decisions. They thought Reggie was good enough. They thought Colin Gillespie was good enough. And they think Jamal, KCP, plus Aaron Gordon, Christian, and Peyton, they think they have enough in order to do that. So I think some of that is just like the decision-making that they made in the front office. So for me, it's not even a question of like, do they have enough? It's like, they made the choice. This is what they have.
We're on the same page with that, with Reggie. It's just more about like, it's why Reggie is important with that. It's why like you're going to need somebody who can do some of those things that are creative on the ball. And like, that's just how, like, they're going to have to live with it. And to your point, like, I know you're saying he's got to be better. He does have to be better, but like, you're probably going to have to live with it even if he's not better, because Michael Malone last night, he said in a post-game presser that he thinks that, hey, there may be only two guys that he really feels comfortable with playing in the playoffs right now.
Do you want to talk about that right now?
Yeah, let's do that right now. I think that's important. He was based, I don't have the exact quote, and so I don't want to get Michael Malone in trouble over this, but like,
I'll pull it up.
He's basically saying that Reggie Jackson, go ahead.
This is a direct quote from Michael Malone. This is from Matt Brooks, who is the phenomenal writer for the Denver Nuggets.
Trusted source. Season.
Yes, trusted source. And he specifically said in the quote tweet, and he said, Michael Malone on Christian Brown, aside from him and Reggie off the bench, I don't know who's going to play in the playoffs. I really don't. Now, he adjusted this a little bit, and he said, aside from him and Reggie off the bench about Christian Brown, I don't know who's going to play in the playoffs. I really don't. But Christian Brown played in the playoffs last year. He has finals experience under his belt.
I think that's fascinating. And Christian obviously has earned that right. He's played really well, especially post All-Star break. He is doing the things that Michael Malone and the Nuggets are asking him to do. So he's guaranteed in. With Reggie, like, I wonder if he's trying to give Reggie confidence in that, because he went the other direction previously and was like, yeah, we need Reggie to just be better. Like, he hasn't been good enough. We know that. He needs to be better. And I wonder with Peyton, like, Peyton hasn't been great lately. Like, he just hasn't. Like, he's had a couple moments here or there, but he hasn't been great. He hasn't been consistent lately. And especially, like, post-All-Star break, he had the Celtics game, which was great. Outside of that one, there hasn't been a lot of consistency with what he's put together.
Yeah, Peyton, the last really good game he had was the San Antonio game. He had 10 points, 3 rebounds, and 2 assists. Was 5 of 8 from 2, and he was a plus 8 in that game. And then he had the Utah game. He had 12 points and 5 rebounds. He had 7 points and 5 rebounds, too, versus Toronto. But yeah, the Portland game wasn't great. New York wasn't great. Minnesota wasn't great. And then Dallas, the bench got demoralized. He was a minus 14 in that game, and then he was a plus 11 versus the Boston Celtics. So I'll say it like this. Michael Malone is just as good in his media training as any coach in the NBA. And I think he uses it to his advantage when he calls out the Nuggets or when he brings up a point about officiating or about foul calls or lack thereof or about letting your foot off the gas or whatever else it might be. So for me, this was like interesting to hear because, yes, as you said, he had something to say about Reggie Jackson previously that said that he knows he needs to be better. But he also said early in the season that Peyton Watson, your minutes aren't guaranteed. You need to go and earn them, which he started doing. And I think because Peyton has not had the best string of games, I think this is an opportunity for Malone to say, hey, yeah, Christian Brown and Reggie Jackson, they're locked in the rotation. That's all. So Peyton, you know, who has been our seventh man this year, if you're going to be in this rotation, we need to see more from you to close out the rest of the season. And I think that's a nice motivation tactic for a second-year player that I don't think he's not resting on his laurels at all. I just think he's just in a little bit of a pit because that's what happens when you're this young. You're going to have these moments where you're not playing well. But I think it's a really good motivational indicator for Peyton Watson that I think he should take very serious because I contend that he's been one of their seven best players this year. I would even say for most of the year, Ron, he was their sixth best player. But Christian Brown picked it up. Reggie obviously has oscillated up and down. But I think Peyton Watson, you know, if you have a nice stretch of games here to close out the season, the last 11, look, then I think you're putting yourself in a really advantageous situation going into the playoffs.
That would be helpful. Like, it certainly would be. And I think that he does have some things to prove. Like, because he's shot, here's his shooting splits over the course of the last 30 games. 45.5 or 43.5 from the field, 25 from three, 63 from the line. Like, straight up, that's just not good enough. Like, we don't have to beat around
shooting
the bush.
19% from three since the All-Star break.
What percent?
19 and 59% from the line.
19 from three, 59 from the line. That is with the game becoming more physical. That is with the game sort of being a little bit more emblematic of what the playoffs are going to look like. And his consistency is what Michael Malone is really going for. That's what he wants. He wants somebody that he can trust every single night, every single rotation that he's going to throw out there.
Bruce Brown.
Yeah, exactly. And so it's not.
Problem is, you ain't got Bruce Brown no more.
Yeah. And so it's not unfair, I don't think, for
Malone. You know what? We shouldn't even give Tim Duncan and them all that much credit for that Spurs run, because they had Manu Ginobili coming off the bench for several years in four championships. Right? That changed everything. Yeah. That literally changed everything. It's like, oh, yeah, here's the greatest six man of all time who's actually a four starter.
Yeah, that seems pretty solid. And that would be pretty great if Denver could get that. They don't have that, at least not yet.
An all-star coming off the bench.
So I'm curious, man. Like, I think that Peyton has another layer that he can get to, obviously. Yeah. But something that I've really been about for, like, basically ever since this year started, he's like 90 to 95% of the way there on most every move he makes, on most every decision he makes, on pretty much everything that he does. It is that final 5 to 10% or so of things, whether it's the finish at the rim, whether it's fouling somebody at the end of a sequence, whether it is the turnover dribbling through traffic. It is that layer, that difference, or like finishing a layup in transition when he's got, or
yeah,
like 3 seconds left, you block a shot, you take it out in transition in the first quarter.
I wasn't mad as that. That was a good, I think he was just trying to be
staring at the shot clock on the other end, dude.
Like, he was like a point two, like sent like a point of a 0.02 off though. So I mean, it wasn't like he was super late.
No, you got to get a shot up. Like that's inexcusable to be out in.
He blocked a shot in the first place. You were in a plus. Everything after that's a plus.
But that's the thing, is like, he is nearly there on these sequences.
Ryan said he would have thrown up a pull-up three-point shooter, y'all. That's what he said.
It's not. No, I just want him to get a shot up on the rim. Like, that's all it is. Like, get a shot up before the clock ends. It's not. That is not a hard distinction to make. Like, but here's the thing. Like, Michael Malone needs that last 5 to 10%. Like, he needs to see that, and the Nuggets need to see that a little bit more consistently. And if they don't get it, he's going to have a lot of these rotations that Christian Brown had in the playoffs last year, where absolutely, like, he played and was consistent, but like Christian Brown got played off the floor against the Lakers, like in that Western Conference Final Series. Like, he just didn't play really by
the
end.
Justin Holiday series, probably.
And yeah, so like that's how Denver's going to have to go about this. But they were able to do that because like Bruce Brown was playing 25 to 30 minutes off the bench. Right. And that's pretty helpful. That's that nice flexibility that you get. So maybe Christian Brown this year can step up into that. Somebody's going to have to, because like, if nobody on the bench can play more than 15 minutes in a series, that's going to be problematic.
I mean, you're going to have games like that. I guess I'm not really tripping about it, because it's like, who's going to have a bench that's really going to like put them in a bind, like the Clippers? Okay, well, guess what? They also have the starters that are going to put themselves in a bind. You know, the Mavericks, yeah, I mean, PJ Washington to come off the bench and them, like, that's cool, you know, but they are obviously in the situation they're in for a reason. I mean, the Lakers have a nice bench, you know, good for them. They won the offseason, you know, and all that other stuff. We just got Spencer Dinwiddie as well. But Boston, their bench is going to be horrific. Like, Luke Kornet, Sam Hauser, Xavier Tillman, no one's really moved by that. The 76ers bench is not good. The Bucks bench is not good. But this is just like, that's the league. Like, you know, the league is just like that. It's really hard to build out 1 through 8. And the Nuggets perfected it last year. And then the NBA was like, all right, cool. Good 1 year of that. Get on out of here, Bruce. Parody. We love parody in the NBA.
Let me ask you this. This, I think, is really where the crux of the conversation is. Is there a scenario where Denver's starting lineup is not positive in a series?
In a series?
In a series.
No, no.
You think that's true?
I think it's true. I know it's true.
Okay.
You typically, if you have the best player in a series and they have the most healthy lineup around them, you're winning those minutes. So the answer is absolutely no. They crushed the Suns in the series on that starting lineup. They crushed the Lakers last year. They crushed the Timberwolves last year, and then they demolished the Heat. This year, they'll play the Mavericks or the Suns or the Kings or the Lakers or the Warriors. They're absolutely winning those starter minutes. The second round, Ryan, they're going to play versus either the Wolves, the Clippers, or the Pelicans. They're crushing the starter minutes in those series. The only one that I wouldn't even say dicey. Well, let me say it would be dicey, but the Thunder minute would be interesting because of Shea and because of the minutes they would have with Shea and Chet in them. But like even then, Jokic and Murray and Porter and Gordon and KCP over the course of the series to win. And then obviously I don't, like I said, you know, you believe probably the Celtics more than I do. I just don't. They're Jason Tatum is a minus whatever it is so far versus Denver for a reason, because they're going to load up their Jokic, Gordon, Porter minutes versus that their bigs, their big wings they have. They're going to lose those minutes pretty handily.
I think you're probably right. And I don't want to just like.
What series do you think they could lose?
I mean, I think they could lose the T-Wolves minutes.
I think they could lose
the Celtics minutes.
So you don't think they're winning the championship then in those series?
Well, that's the thing. Is like that's the entire conversation that I want to have. Is because like if the starters aren't lose if they aren't winning their minutes, then like Denver's just not going to win the championship. Like because yeah, that's kind of why though. That's why I'm having this bench conversation with you and this rotation conversation, because Denver's going to need these times where the starters like, because here's the thing, like unless the starters solve every problem, every single one in front of them, and they might, like they absolutely might, but unless they solve every single problem in front of them, then somebody off the bench or some lineup configuration off the bench, whether it's a Jokic blended lineup or a Murray blended lineup or whatever, is going to have to be positive and is going to have to give Denver that advantage in that series. That's what I mean. And I don't think it's crazy to want that to happen, but also not expect that to happen and that Denver starters are just going to have to do the thing.
I don't understand your premise of that question, though.
So, like, hypothetically, like, let's say there is a, like, let's say it's the Celtics. Let's say the Celtics find a way to crack Denver's starting lineup. Let's say they
lose. The series is over in 5-6.
Okay, then that's simple. Because
but that's the NBA, so, Ryan. I think you're asking me a... For me, this question is insane.
I don't think that's true, though. Hold on.
It's the Chicago Bulls. If they lose the Jordan, Pippen, Rodman minutes, they're losing. Period. Mm-hmm. Like, there is no bench. The Spurs, they lose the Duncan, Manu, Tony minutes, they're losing. If you look at the Lakers, the Kobe Powell with Lamar Odom minutes, then they're losing that series. Like, it doesn't matter. And I think my thing is, like, there's no bench. And I think it's more so, Ryan, what I would even specify it as, like, there's the Jokic, non-Jokic minutes. There's the Kobe Powell, non-Kobe Powell minutes. There's the Duncan minutes, the non-Duncan minutes. And then there's the Jordan and LeBron minutes. So the only time LeBron, even as starters, they lost their minutes was when they were playing the Golden State Warriors with Kevin Durant and them. Remember, Steph Curry and them, they lost their minutes, especially from games five, six, and seven on. They just got dominated. So I think some of this is like, if your best player is on the floor, you're typically putting your best lineup configuration around them, period. So if you don't win those minutes, then your bench isn't going to carry you unless you, again, could even – but I'm saying I can't think of any team in the last 30 years where you can look at their non-superstar minutes and then say, oh, because of those minutes, they won, except in maybe an abnormality, which would be like one or two seasons. That's just typically when you win championships. It's because when you put your very best on the court with your best player, they were just at least slightly to above average or just overwhelmingly better than the opposition that they were playing against. So for me, it's like if they don't win their Jokic minutes, then it's just cooked.
You're probably right. And I would need to do a lineup study of these teams in the past 30 years.
Back at it again, ladies and gentlemen.
In order to really like assess that and like whether that's true. I think you're right, though. I think you're right that if Denver's,
do you have an example in mind that you might be thinking about?
One of them was the 2011 Mavericks, where a guy like Jason Terry, Deshaun Stevenson,
he was freaking great. Oh my gosh, yeah, that's a great example.
Exactly. So like, and like somebody like JJ Barea, for example, made an impact in a game. Like you have these moments, and like Denver had it last year with Christian Brown and with Bruce Brown, and then guys like that who were able to in the finals change a game with the way that
they were playing. Also playing next to Jamal. Remember those games that Christian was going off, you know, Jamal was lifting the floor up, but they were literally, when Joker was on the court, the Heat were in shambles. And so that's what I'm saying. Like when you have, and that's where my philosophy comes from. If you have the best player on the court, and they become unsolvable, your team is cooked because you don't know. You can't throw enough like at them, and you're praying. And we already seen this in the Celtics series, the Celtics matchup this year. The Celtics got to a point where like, oh, damn, well, you got to abandon the Jokic minutes. All right, Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown, Drew Holiday, Kristaps, go play. No Joker. Go win those minutes. They got a plus six. Malone's like, cool, shut the water off. Put Joker back in the game. And the same thing versus the Knicks. Knicks, oh, well, look, we're doing really great. We're doing really great. Joker come back in the game, 750. Shut the water off. And then it's the same thing versus the Suns or the same thing versus the whoever. Like, that is the NBA. That's what I love about the NBA, which why the Nuggets never won a championship, Ryan. We would be good. We'd be like, oh, Kobe's not in the game. Melo, Kenyon Martin, you know, even Anthony Carter. They're like winning their minutes. Oh, all right, cool. We're getting back in the game. And then Kobe came back in the game. It's over. Like, we can't do nothing about that. Like, why is he making these shots?
I think it's fair. And, like the reason why I ask the question, as you know, is, like, we're trying to have these playoff rotation questions and trying to come up with, okay, what are these different scenarios that Denver may go through in these playoffs where you come up with different lineups, you come up with different groups, you have to build certain lineups out where, hey, you need a 5-0 run from this group in this next 60 seconds. Like, how are you going to get it done? And you can't have Joker or Jamal on the floor. Things like that, where you need some flexibility. You need like, hey, maybe it's the rare game where Joker loses his minutes. But Denver's won those games before, even in the playoffs last year, where like they actually had some really great moments with their bench unit that picked up their guys. So I think it's possible. I really do. And that's why
I
hold Peyton Watson and Christian Brown and Reggie Jackson to that standard, because they should be held to that standard. This is championship time.
No, but I'm saying, but Ryan, I guess for me, it's like, this is where basketball philosophies are colliding a little bit. I'm hearing what you're saying and I'm countering. Do you know in the 2018 finals that when they played, when LeBron James, who cooked, he was cooking that series, dang near average a 30-point triple-double. He was a minus 13. In the game, he had 51-8-8 in. Minus 13, 51-8-8. The next game, 29-9-13 on 50% from the field, 50% from three, and 78% from the line. He was a minus 18. The next game, 33-10-11 on 46% from the field, 1-6 from three, 6-7 from the free throw line, minus 8. The last game, 23-7-8, he shot 54% from the field, and he was a minus 21. That's what I mean. Like, yeah, sure. If you're going to do that, you're going to win. But it also took Steph, and it also took KD on the other end. And that's the greatest player of our generation, arguably of all time, including Michael Jordan. So I guess for me, Ron, it's like when you're bringing bench numbers, bench units to me, I'm like, cool. But, like, those things are subsidiaries. Because if Jokic, like, even in – hold on. Let me look at something real quick. So if you do – Jokic, like, season – because I want to say last year in the playoffs, here are the games. So of all the games that Joker played in the playoffs last year, if my computer. So the only games he was a minus in is, you remember this.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's funny. Okay, I'm looking at it now. Yeah.
43-11-6 versus the Wolves, and he was a minus 14, and he was 60% shooting almost, 43-11-6. And then versus Miami, 41-11-4, and he was shot 57% from the field and 40% from three and 88% from the free throw line, and he was a minus 11. But you know what? You know what the outcome of those games were? They lost.
The games that they lost against Phoenix, he was still a plus in, which was crazy. Like, and you see the lines from those games where he had 30-17-17, and then he had 53 points in the next one, along with 11 assists, and was a plus five and plus two in each of those games, and they lost them. So, like, look, you are right. I do think that you're correct. But I wanted to have that conversation because, like, look, it's going to come down to Joker. It's going to come down to potentially the greatest player of this generation. Like, it's going to come down to him. It's going to come down to Jamal. It's going to come down to Denver's plan A. And if their plan A is good enough, if their starters are good enough, they'll win a title.
But you know who they're not going to blame? If they don't win and they're, you know, minutes are spotty with the starters, they're not going to say nothing about Christian or Peyton or Reggie. They're not going to say anything. It's all going to go down to Joker. He wasn't good enough. That's just the way to, that's the way the league works. You know, if you LeBron lost the title 07 and then lost it again in, you know, nobody's going to bring up the fact that Wade was really good, but that they sucked. Everybody sucked that series, including LeBron, but nobody brings up that. They say LeBron averaged 16 points a game.
Which you did.
There's a reason. Like, you know, that's it. There's a reason why if you wear the heavy is the head that wears the crown. Yeah. You know, welcome to the league, bro. You lose your minutes, you're getting cooked. I got something to say about it. You, sir. Listen here. You, sir. Every time Embiid has a minus in a playoff game, you tweet. Every time Giannis was a minus in a playoff game, you tweet. I didn't hear nothing about, oh, did you see what Jay Crowder didn't do? You see what D'Anthony Melton didn't do? Do you see what Tobias Harris didn't do? Y'all better watch what happens.
It's gonna be
Dame Lillard. It's gonna be 4 of 18 one of these games. 4 of 18. You're gonna have a negative game from their bench. Giannis is gonna have 35, 18, and 6, and they're gonna lose. And here comes Ryan Blackburn. Oh, Giannis was a minus 6. Oh, he was six of 12 from the free throw line.
I will fight back on this one because of my Jamal versus Dame agenda. That's where I will fight back on. I will make sure that everybody knows how much better Jamal is in the playoffs than Damian Lillard. That will certainly be happening. All right. Hey, let's take another break. When we come back, let's chat about the upcoming schedule. Let's chat about where Denver's at. Unless you have any final thoughts on this conversation.
No, we can have the peaking conversation in the next segment when we're talking about the rest of the schedule.
Cool. Let's do it. We will be right back. But first, this message from Kim Becker.
What's up, guys? Kim Becker here with Mile High Sports. Make sure you guys are following us on social media so that you never miss a Mile High Sports Daily. Monday through Friday morning, we'll post a video hosted by me catching you up on everything you need to know when it comes to sports right here in the Mile High State. TikTok, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, YouTube, you name it, we're there and we've got you covered for everything Colorado sports.
Whether you're a morning person or a bedtime procrastinator, everyone deserves a mattress that works for their style. And you'll find the best mattress for you at Ashley. The new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley brings you one-of-a-kind body-conforming technology, making every sleep tailored to be your best. The collection also features cool-to-the-touch covers and motion absorption to help minimize sleep disruptions from partners, pets, or kids. Shop the all-new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley. For the love of home.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
All right, everybody, final segment, Pickaxe and Roll. Thank you so much for tuning into the show. Really appreciate my guy Swiper for hopping in on this chat. We're on the weekends with Swiper Grind, doing everything that we can to bring great content to you. And if you're listening on Twitter, thank you so much for doing so. If you're listening on YouTube, make sure to give this a like and subscribe to the video. And if you're listening on the audio side for the Pickaxe and Roll feed, thank you so much. Leave a rating, review, and subscribe to that. All right. Swipe, let's talk about the peaking conversation. It's hard not to say that Denver's peaking right now because they are 14-2 in the 16 games. But something I heard from Matt Moore was that he doesn't think that Denver's playing as well as their 14-2 record. And I think that there's some merit to that. Like we've got some guys that Denver probably needs to get playing better, but they're still 14-2. How do you parse those two things?
Yeah, so this is funny. So the Nuggets have played 9 games in the clutch since the All-Star break. They are 7-2 in those games, which is the second best record in the league. They're a plus 48.4 in the clutch, including another clutch game last night. They have a 155.4 offensive rating and a 107.0 defensive rating in the clutch. So they've been pretty good. You know, they've been pretty good in the clutch. They've taken care of business for the most part. Since the All-Star break, the Denver Nuggets are a plus 9.6 in net rating. They're tied with the Oklahoma City Thunder, 119.6 offensive rating and a 110.0 defensive rating, which puts them to six in defense, since the All-Star break, and they're second in offense. So basically, it's been them, the Celtics, and the Thunder. So, sure. Are they peaking record-wise? Yes. But if you look at their actual performance, they're actually not outperforming in a large bit how they've been the most of the season. The thing is, the Nuggets are the ultimate coasters. The ultimate coasters. They absolutely will play well and play hard, and they will dominate. But the thing is, they do it in spurts. The Toronto game is an example of that. Ryan Blackburn and I, you know, disagreed on if they were going to drop a game, and Toronto, here comes Ryan with his little tweet. Oh, this is look out, y'all. This is the spot for the Denver Nuggets, as if this is the Denver Nuggets of 2018-19. I'm like, well, they're not losing this game. And then
they get
down.
The Nuggets of 2023, dude. Like last year.
Who did they lose to?
They would have lost last year as well.
Well, in March, yeah, but they were up. Yeah, this is the thing. We're comparing them not finishing out the season, but they're up seven games with Jokic. You think Jokic, all I have to play for is the MVP? I'm not about to do that. You thought I was about to play hard for that award?
<That's fair.
laughs> Do you know who I am? Now, this year, the team needs something. I have to play well so the team performs well. We stay at the top of the West. All right, fine. I guess if I have to. Now, here's the thing, is the Nuggets, they had the game versus the Knicks that got dicey, the Timberwolves that got dicey, but like neither one of those teams are at full strength. And for me, it's like the Nuggets are just like, I'm not going to come out and just absolutely mollywop you when you don't have all your people. They're not the Celtics. The Celtics, they just roll. Like, they're rolling people. They're getting double digits. That's just not the way they work. But the Nuggets took the Laker game serious. Guess what they did? They dominated that game. And they got down 10 and still dominated. They were not going to lose that game. Versus the Celtics, the Nuggets got up at the end of the first quarter, Ryan. They did not relinquish control of the game the rest of the game. And then this is including, remember, when Jokic got a T, I think Murray got a T. And again, they don't get T's in the playoffs. They get T's in regular season game. They feel like they can still win. Yeah. And they closed the door in that. They had the game versus the Suns that they lost. But like the Raptors game, they got down 15. They came back and they won. The Heat game, they beat in Miami. Jokic took 8 shots. It was like, okay, well, we're going to get this done. I think a lot of this is, bro, I don't feel like the Nuggets are peaking. Maybe the Jazz game is the best example. They had 142, 121. But, like, for the most part, they're not, like, going out and, like,
putting on crazy. Despicable third quarter in that game?
44 points? Was that what it was?
Yeah, they allowed 44. They were a minus 20. It was the worst quarter that they played all year.
That's what I mean. So let me ask you this. Because I feel like their peak is playoffs. Like, we know from start to finish, we have to put you away. We have to put you away. But right now, what for you has been their most convincing? Like, have you felt like just utter sheer dominance since the All-Star break? Like, what have you been feeling when you've been watching them?
What I'm feeling is, it's funny. Like, I feel the inevitability conversation with them a lot, where they, no matter how far away they are, like no matter if they're losing by 10 points, 15 points, 22 points, however much it is, they're still in the game because they have Jokic, because they have Murray, and because they can like execute when the time comes. And like guys like KCP and Michael Porter especially have really stepped up in those moments where, hey, you need a big three to get back into the game. You need a big defensive stop to get back into the game. And Denver comes up with it. They find ways, they dig deep. And I've been comparing them to a very interesting team, the 2021-22 Suns, which were like they won 64 games. They lost in the second round of the playoffs, but they were clutch merchants. Like that was the thing, is like people were wondering, is this really the quality of a 64-win team, or are they just executing in the clutch really well? Now, their execution stopped in the playoffs. They did not carry that through to the playoffs, and that is why they lost. But in the regular season, it didn't matter how much they were down by. It didn't matter. Like, they were down 10 points with 3 minutes to go. They were still winning that game, like, because they were so good in those moments. So I think that's where the conversation kind of comes to, is playing in the, like, in the clutch. Like, Denver doesn't get rattled. Jokic doesn't get rattled. Murray doesn't get rattled. Like, they're never, ever going to get rattled in that situation. Chris Paul will. Devin Booker will. Guys like that will. And we saw that with that Suns team a couple years ago. I think that it'll be a little bit different for Denver this time around in the playoffs.
So what's funny is their defense on the season has gotten slightly worse than the clutch. It's actually dropped from a 96.6, unfortunate, to a 98.8. So, you know,
it's still, slackers.
Yeah, it's still fourth. But guess what? Their offense, which was once barely top 10 in the clutch, it's a 125.8. They have soared up the charts since the All-Star break. Because they have a 155 offensive rating since the All-Star break, by the way, which again, is also insane. The Bucks actually have better. But the Denver Nuggets on the year, Ryan Chartburn, they have a plus 27.0 net rating in the clutch now. And this includes games when they closed with Justin Holiday and Reggie Jackson versus the Kings that they lost. This includes yesterday where they didn't have Jokic or Murray. So I think a lot of this is like, this is Jamal Murray missed shot as well. This is the Kevin Durant made three-pointer to tie the game up. The Nuggets have a 61.5 effective field goal percentage in the clutch, which, oh, by the way, did you know leads the NBA, Ryan Blackburn? They are the most efficient team in the clutch in the NBA, which I'm sure nobody doubts. They also have a 66.3% true shooting in the clutch. They have one of the best defensive rebounding numbers in the clutch. Matter of fact, the best. They're a 78.0 defensive rebound rating in the clutch, which means once you miss the shot, it's cooked. You're done. You're not getting a second shot. So this is what I'm saying, bro. It's like, yeah, I think they're dominating right now, but I just feel as if there's still levels that they can get to. It's just right now they're just, we have to win, so let's win. But we're not going to put our foot down for their game on to the end of the game.
It is translating that clutch mentality to the rest of the 43 minutes, to the other 43 minutes. And they'll do that in the playoffs. They will. I feel very comfortable after we watched it last year, after we've seen them do this over and over again, that they will translate that mentality a little bit better. And that will be amazing. Like that will be a lot of fun to watch. And like Denver can lock in those moments and be really, really special.
Right.
And like they know how much it matters in those moments to put teams away. Right.
Yeah, you know, I'm curious to see how it looks. I think that the Nuggets, they're just kind of taking care of business. That's what it feels like. It's business time. And I think Jokic, you know, I think somebody asked him about the tweet, that text he sent out to the group. And he said, well, if you needed that for motivation or whatever, then something's wrong. I just think they're just like, look, we lost three games, Ryan, that we shouldn't have lost. They lost to the Kings twice, and then the Bucks got blown out in Milwaukee. That's the best Bucks win since Doc Rivers got there. I just think that, like, they knew they needed to lock in and get it done, and they've just shown the appropriate amount of effort needed in order to do so without trying to humiliate the opponent. But I think, like I said, once the playoffs come, there is no more, like, who are we game planning for? There is no more, who do we have down the road? There is no more seeding. It's, we have to dominate. We're going to get this game over as soon as possible, and we want to set a message really early on in this series, and I think that's going to be the goal. Is taking care of business, specific game plans, and then let's see how we roll from there.
So, really interestingly, Denver's clutch rating this year, you said it was plus 27.0. A couple years ago, Phoenix was at plus 33.4.
They were, yeah, they were cooking.
They were 33-9 in games that went to the clutch, which is just disgusting. That is insane. And I mean, I took a lot of pressure in that team falling back because like they couldn't keep getting away with it. And like we loved this for sure. That was a lot of fun to see Luka sort of dispel that team.
You're comparing this Nuggets team to the Suns when I think everyone in the chat will tell you how they feel.
Well, that's the thing, is like the difference between like the Suns and the Nuggets is that the Nuggets have the best player in the world and the Suns have Devin Booker. Like There's levels to it, like in that clutch aspect of things. Like, I mean, Chris Paul was great. He did a great job of organizing, but he always kind of finds a way to falter in the playoffs, and Jamal Murray finds a way to rise. So that's the difference. It really is.
Did you want to weigh in on the Jamal Jalen Brunson conversation? I know if you see that circulating. All I did was put a stat head tweet out there, and I didn't say anything about it. I just put it out there just for information's sake.
I think Jalen Brunson is a better regular season player and Jamal's a better playoff player. And like Jalen has risen in the playoffs and he's done a really good job, but he could be taken advantage of in a lot of ways with his size, especially on the defensive end, that Jamal just doesn't, like, he doesn't have that happen as often to him. And then Jamal will make the crazy shots that you need, and he can big boy other players in the playoffs. Like there are different things that they excel at, but can Jalen Brunson carry a regular season like better than Jamal can? Sure. Yeah. And if that's what people care about, then that's fine.
Okay.
Like, but do I, like, am I going to take Jamal in the playoffs? Yes. Like, what are we doing here?
So okay.
That's how I feel.
Okay.
What about this homestand? Like, we're over the hour mark here. Let's go over the homestand.
Who cares? There's everybody's watching. There's 700 people in here. They love watching this.
That's true.
We have Grizzlies, Suns, Timberwolves, Cavs, and Spurs coming up. And then this week, Ryan, they play the Grizzlies on Monday. They play the Suns with a repeat with Devin Booker, hopefully fully healthy and everybody locked in, on Wednesday. They play the Timberwolves on Friday, and then they play the Cleveland Cavaliers on Sunday. So four games this week, three playoff teams, including two teams at the top of their conference and a team trying to stay out of the play-in.
By the way, Memphis, 8-27 when Memphis is at home, 16-20 when they are on the road. Like, 16-20 is actually not a bad record. Like, the Lakers are 12-20. The Rockets are 10-24. Utah is 9-20. Memphis is at least competent when they're on, when they're going on the road. So for whatever reason, I'm not sure why that is, but they will not be a pushover for Denver. Like, Denver's gonna have to try against them.
Man, just thinking, if they would have had Ja Morant right now, they would be playing Ja Morant, Jaren Jackson Jr., and Desmond Bane, and then playing Bill Booker, Durant, and then playing Kat and Rudy, and then playing Mobley, Jared Allen, and Donovan Mitchell, and Darius Garland, and then playing Wimby, and then playing the Clippers with Harden, Kawhi, and Paul George. So this would have been, if everybody was healthy, an incredible run that I think would have been great basketball.
Fuck the Eastern Conference, man. Like, how is that even possible? Like, that's not even like the top of the top for the West. Like, you're missing the Thunder in there. You're missing for a long time, it was LeBron James and Stephen Curry. Like, you're missing those teams. Like, it's just insane what the hoops that the Western Conference has to jump through just to be good.
Yeah, I mean, I think I love Ja. Like, he's just such a great player. And, yeah, bro, I mean, this would have been – and this is why injuries are sad and are just really sad, because these – I mean, hopefully Kat, you know, comes back. He's good, but – the Grizzlies would have been a monster this year, because they would have just been so good defensively. And I think Ja, with another year under his belt, I mean, they could have been really, really, really special. And even if Ja, didn't, after he came back from suspension, it didn't get hurt, they could be vying for a play-in spot right now. So this is what I mean. Like, you could be, because right now, the only teams that aren't in the playoff position right now are the Spurs, and who's right behind in front of the Spurs right now, Ryan?
Portland.
Portland. That's it. And they Denver could have been, else is fighting for the playoffs.
Denver did get the easiest competition that they had last night. Like, starting five rookies, and those guys, we talked about this last night. Scoot Henderson, he will be good, but boy, is he not good now. Right. He is not good. Like, every time they needed a play from him, and then, like, he tried to attack Denver in any way, it was bad. So,
bro, he's so, but once he figures out, oh, wait a minute, I'm literally more explosive and faster. My first step than anybody in the league. Cool. Let me just burst to the rim and create. And then he has some nice passes too. It's like, once he just rounds out that stuff, bro, man, he's just going to be such a monster. I can't.
It'll happen. It'll happen eventually. It's just going to take some time. Okay. What's the record for this upcoming week? They got, like you said, Memphis. They've got Phoenix. They've got, what were the teams? I just had it pulled up.
So they have Memphis, Phoenix, Timberwolves, and Cleveland this week.
Okay. I'm going to predict 3-1 and be pessimistic, like, because they've been playing really well. There will be a time where they drop a game. I'm not sure which one it's going to be, but they will drop one of them. And
you're going to play hard versus the Suns because they just lost. So
there's no doubt about it. And they'll probably win against the Timberwolves too. Like,
then they'll lose to Cleveland.
Yeah, that's honestly the
that's
one.
That's the one, like, where it's like, all right, well, if they were like a game and a half up of the Thunder or something like that, which would be great. Then they'll oh yeah, that well, go ahead. Even at home, go ahead.
Oh, you developed a margin at the top and it's gone. And oh man, that was such a nice 24 hours that you had that one seed for. Now you're back at the two.
I'm not going to hold you, Ron. I'm very thankful for Shay and them, because I think they're a really, really great team. And I think they legitimately are contenders this year, but they are also in a position where they're pushing Joker and have to like actually will win the MVP this year.
Yeah, you are required to win the MVP.
Yeah,
if last you, year was not required.
That's what I'm saying. Like this year is just like okay, like if you don't play well, he's like, God, like we a 30-point triple double versus the Knicks on March 21st. Man. What?
Hey, I mean that just never happens. Absolutely never happens. Let me
he goes out versus the Suns and then your revenge game versus the Suns too. That man, that's what I'm telling you, man. Like, I'm glad that Western Conference is like back good at the top again because just get the best basketball. And Edwards making this rise.
Superbook has they have Jokic at -800 to win the MVP.
It's over.
It's pretty much over. Like unless something crazy happens and like he just. Like if he sat out for the entire rest of the season with injury and Shea just went off and they became the one seed far and away, then maybe that would change things. But or if Joker was just like trolling for the last 3 weeks of the season, then it might sort of become a thing. But I don't know. Like I don't really see it. I think Joker will win.
Well, remember, I said going into this year, your good friend Swiper, who you love and adore.
My good friend Swiper, who loves to remind me how right he is all the time.
I'm just saying that going into the year, what did I tell you? This will be the easiest MVP he's ever won. I said that because there was just last year, they were left with dirt in their pockets. They bet on the other dude, and everybody was like, well, advanced stats can't win out again this time. You know,
it's not even they didn't, by the way. Like, SGA is leading.
Well, he's leading EPM, but the Jokic is leading he's leading six of the eight traditional MVP metrics still, which is still, insane. But what I'm saying about this thing with Joker is like, last year, Joker won everything, Ryan. This is why he's the first player to lead in PER, EPM, win shares for 48 and VORP, all five to not win the MVP. So they broke away. To me, advanced analytics mean nothing anymore. I'm being honest with you. Like that stuff means nothing anymore. Ever since last year, Joker shattered everything. Shattered. It doesn't mean anything. There's no way you could bring up advanced analytics anymore and use them for MVP conversation because even if somebody's overwhelmingly the favorite, it doesn't matter. And so for me, I really don't care. I don't care about any of that stuff anymore. Like I care about it for conversation to tell how good a player's been. But in terms of like valuing who's the best player in the world, no.
And it's fair. Like that's probably how it should be. Like you've got the eye test. Like there are various benchmarks that you have to put up, and then you've got to win. And like
I meant to ask you, did you know when I put that EPM tweet out there yesterday just to get a gauge of where the Nuggets were, do you know who EPM says the Nuggets second and third best player are?
Well, I'm sure if you sort it by EPM wins, then it's probably not Jamal. But no. If you sort it by EPM, like just the plus minus, then it is Jokic, Jamal, and MPJ.
Aaron and then MPJ. Aaron in front of MPJ. So Aaron will be.
So Jokic, Jamal, Aaron.
Yeah. And then MPJ. Yeah.
Okay.
Like, that's not what I'm saying. Yeah. If you're doing the wins, it's like it's MPJ or whatever else. And you know, which Aaron's
that availability, like, which is a credit to him, man. Like it really is. It's
insane. Jamal's been 16 great. Games. He's missed the second half of three other games. And this is the other thing about, can I ask you something real quick?
Sure.
Malone's never going to win coach of the year. We know that. It's just, he's not going to, but I've heard, you know, people have been putting Mazzulla's name out there. You know, they're going to win 65 games. Like how is Mazzulla not doing whatever? I'm just like, but you all know he's not a better coach than Malone or Spo or Mark or whoever. You know these things. So, like, why are we going to hand out this award to coaches that you know aren't in that conversation? But on the other end of this, too, bro, I'm like, everybody just – and this is – let me ask you. I'm asking you genuinely.
Sure.
I know Malone has Joker and people are like, if you have an all-time great, that's why you're winning, which is what happens. But why is for Malone, though, everybody talked about injuries for like the Heat. They have 32 different starting lineups this year. Injuries for Chris Finch and all sorts of stuff. Jamal Murray has missed basically almost a quarter of the season this year. And they're fighting for the number one seed again. And they're the first team to 50 wins in the Western Conference again. Why is it that Malone doesn't get the same level of appreciation from the national media on that stuff? On winning awards, I think best coach in the world, he's in the convo. But why is it that Malone doesn't get like the regular season, like last year even? They were dominant. They were the best team in the West. And then it's a sweeping victory for Mike Brown, who's also a really good coach in his own right.
I I honestly think it's Joker's net rating swing, where the way that Denver plays when Joker's on the floor is just entirely different than when he's off the floor. And it's so drastic. It is such a massive difference for even a superstar that a lot of people will, like, they'll use that as an excuse to say, oh yeah, well, I mean, clearly Malone's not a good coach. Look what happens when his best player isn't out there. Look what happens when his best player who organizes everything isn't out there. And that will be sort of the narrative. And, like, if I'm being honest, like, Denver's offense, when they run things without Joker, it always looks like I always have questions. I always have, like, concerns and, like, things that are odd in terms of, like, why they run certain things, why they're like, why is Michael Porter just standing in the corner half the time when he's your best offensive threat, things like that. Yeah. Like, so I think that there's, he will never, like, they're like, the only way that he's going to win a champion or a coach of the year is if Joker misses a significant chunk of time, like at least like 15, 20 games.
No.
And Denver is like 500 in that time. And then they get the one seed.
He missed 14. No, he played 69 last year. He missed 13 last year. I want to say they were 6-7 when he didn't play. It's not bad. They beat the Clippers with just Jamal and Zeke Nagy starting. But people still thought Ty Lue was a better coach than he was last year. I think for me, Ryan, it's like when I watched yesterday, I was like, They run pick and roll with less than anybody in the NBA. They ran it more yesterday. But the problem is, bro, like, I think it's intentional. They don't vary outside of their playbook with Joker's on the court. They stick to it because I think for them it's just like, we're not going to mess up. Everybody has a role, and we're not changing that up. We're not touching anything. That way, everybody you can play, the only person that plays differently when Joker's not on the court is Jamal. You get more range to do what you want to do with certain things like this. But I just think for me, it was like watching yesterday. I'm like, I mean, I get it. But at the end of the day, like, I mean, if you ask Malone to put up a game plan without Joker versus the Celtics, oh, he would make it a dogfight.
Yeah.
He made it a dogfight versus OKC this year. They didn't have Jay Will, but like the Nuggets didn't have Jokic either. So I just think for me, it's just like they beat the Clippers with no Joker, no Jamal. And it's Malone that did that. Like, Malone made that adjustment. So that's why for me, it's just like, and in the playoffs, when they went to that zone, and Miami was like, oh, we figured something out. Well, Malone said, okay, cool. Well, then all I'm going to do is change the way we're doing it. So Joker, go baseline. And every time you touch the ball or you think about throwing him the ball, automatic cutters destroyed their zone the rest of the game.
Oh, yeah.
So no, I think for me, it's like, just like,
they're like problem solving, man. Like there's a lot of good problem solving stuff. And it's not just Joker that does it. Like he is often deferential to the coaching staff in terms of like, hey, they want me to do this. I will do this. I will see it better than anybody else in NBA history, but I will still do it.
Yeah.
And, but like part of that thought process of how they break it down, it's not just Joker problem solving. It is the coaching staff helping him out, aiding him. And Michael Malone is a part of that. I think a lot of people also associate him as like emotional, like positivity, players coach, somebody who gets guys going the right direction and like motivates them to play better, but it's really still about the players doing it rather than Malone, the tactical genius, the guy who is coming up with the ATOs and the out of bounds plays and things like that.
The stuff that he did to D'Angelo Russell that started in the press conference and then did it on the court. That was brilliant.
It was awesome. Like that's my favorite Malone moment of all time. Is like
he took their third best player out of the series.
It was awesome.
And then everybody always says, like Miami Heat fans, like, you know, shot Locked On Heat. They always said the Nuggets guarding Jimmy Butler better than anybody. It's like, yeah, why do you think that is? And, or even, you know what I love? You know what I love? Also, let me just go on this Malone thing real quick and we can be done. Do you know the reason why the Nuggets allow for Isaiah Hartenstein and on DeAndre Ayton and Anthony Davis to score so well when they play versus Nuggets in the regular season?
Because they're worth 2 points.
Yeah, that's the point. It's like, yeah, here, have this little area. Oh, guess what? Brunson's not shooting. DiVincenzo's not shooting. Randall's not shooting. Whoever else. Or Booker's not shooting. Chris Paul's not shooting. Kevin Durant's not shooting. That's fine. We want to give you the most difficult spot on the court and most inefficient spot on the court to work with. Oh, Bam Adebayo. Oh, y'all, he averaged 21 points a game in the series. He was great. He killed Jokic. He had a 50 true shooting. He literally destroyed their offense from the inside out. And who did that? That was Malone. And Malone started doing that 2018-19. And then carried over into this era. They just got even better at it. That's why, for me, it's just like, it's just insane to me that he doesn't get more regular season love when he's literally telling you what to do and you do it, and then he goes on the other end, he gets an even better shot more often than not.
Malone's great, man. Like, I've been in his corner for a long time, and just the way that he has approached things with Denver, he pushes the right buttons at every single moment. And like he we just saw it last night. He's going to motivate Peyton Watson. Like, he's going to help him. He loves him. He wants him to be better. And Peyton Watson will be better because of what Michael Malone said last night.
I don't know, man. I'm literally looking at the standings and the coach of the year finalists. I'm just like,
he's probably not even in the top 10 in terms of like it's hilarious. It's yeah. And I remember when Giannis and Budenholzer won like MVP and coach of the year in the same year. And that was when like Denver was like 2018-19, where Malone helped Denver get to 54 wins, second seed. He coached the Western Conference All-Stars that year. He should have won it that year. That should have been his that year. And Budenholzer won anyway. It was bad. That should not have happened.
Yeah. And then, but that's the other part about that too. Like, so they won that year, 54 games, but they beat the Warriors that year, the first team to beat them when they had KD in them. And then they had and everybody's like, Mark Dagnall and all them. I'm like, the youngest team in the league. The Nuggets were the fourth youngest team in basketball that year. Jokic was in his age 23 season and Murray's in his age 21 season. And they had Paul Millsap and Torrey Craig and Mason Plumlee and Monte and Malik Beasley and Gary Harris and all them, which is cool. But they won. They had one legitimate all-star.
They were the Thunder before the Thunder.
Like, come on, bro. Like, this is crazy. Jokic finished fourth in MVP voting that year.
Yeah. Dagnall's going to win it this year, and he deserves it. Like, he's been great. He is a great coach, and he's a good tactical coach in the way that they have done certain things. Like, he deserves it. No questions asked. But Malone's going to get lost in the shuffle. He's going to go down as one of the best coaches maybe ever.
Yeah, if he wins two rings, he's Hall of Fame. Like, shoot.
Pretty sick.
By the way, shout out Jessica Chastain, turns 47 years old today. Shout out Jessica Chastain.
Shout out. That's a girl.
If you're listening, Jessica.
Yeah. Hey.
Swipe is here for you.
Swipe is trying to make a pass. She's trying to make a run.
Birthday. And I'm just saying, she's one of my favorite actresses of all time. I love Jessica Chastain. She's amazing. So shout out to her. Let me ask you this. Go ahead.
What was the poker movie that she was in?
Molly's Game. Molly's Game. Great movie. By the way, let me ask you this. This is how we can end it. This is a random trivia. Anybody in the chat? So millennials, among millennial actors or actresses. Okay. So this is from 1981 to 1996. Millennials, which you are also a millennial.
Yep.
You're born in 96.
Born in 96. So, I'm right at the tail.
So you're last year. You and Jokic are the last years. Or Jamal. You and Jamal are the last years. Yeah. So let me ask you this. Among all millennial actors and actresses, who is the best? The best millennial actor or actress in the world.
The best? Like, isn't that super subjective?
I mean, yeah, but I would say it's subjective, but there's also, I think, an objective answer.
Okay, can I say
Denzel? Between men and women. Huh?
Can I say Denzel?
I said millennial.
Oh, okay. Like, is he
81 to 96, bro? Use your brain.
Oh, like born in that. Okay. Yes. Okay. Sorry.
You know what a millennial is?
Yeah, barely. I've got a millennial brain, that's for sure. That's a good question.
Maybe this will help. This will help a little bit. I think it's Emma Stone, and I don't think there's a next one up. I think Emma Stone. I think Heath Ledger would have been if he would be in the convo. Anne Hathaway also, she's an older millennial. But I think if you just do dead set millennial, I think Emma Stone might be the best pure actress or actor among all millennials for her acting skills, the movie she's been in, her peak from where she's been to now, and also where she's headed. She's 34, 35 years old. Two best actresses already. Already two best actresses. Jennifer Lawrence has won for Silver Linings Playbook, but she took time off because of motherhood and stuff. I think all the way around, bro, everything. I think it might be Emma Stone. So you let me know. You have some other names you can put in there. Margot, Michael B. Jordan. There's some names that kind of fell out over the years, but I think it might
be. Yeah, like I Timothy Chalamet is yeah, just really at good. The like the tail end, like me. He's 28. Like he could probably fit into that going forward. Is Will Smith a millennial?
No.
He's before that?
Gen X.
Okay.
He's in his 50s.
I'm looking at some lists here. Emily Blunt?
She's older version. Her and her husband, John Krasinski. She's also really good, but she doesn't have the resume that Emma Stone has.
Scarlett Johansson?
Also good. She has Blue Eye Rabbit. Might be her best pure acting movie, but I think she probably still doesn't reach Emma Stone. But I think her best pure movie, non-Marvel specific, is probably Jojo Rabbit. Jojo Rabbit, rather.
It was good. Like, look, I love Emma Stone.
DiCaprio is also
good. I love so many of the things that she has been in, that she has done. And what is my brother doing in the chat? He's in the other room. Like, what are you doing, dude? Have you guys seen the Jokic commercials?
That we don't know about?
That's a millennial actor right there.
So you have to who's your answer?
Emma Stone's a great answer, man.
Jake Gyllenhaal is in there as well.
Let's go millennial.
Joseph Gordon-Levitt. Is he a millennial?
I don't know. Jesse Eisenberg.
What movie?
For Social Network, maybe.
Wait, which one is that?
Jesse Eisenberg. He's the one.
He's
Zombieland.
Really good. No, he's really good, but no, he's not. He's not in a combo for best in the world.
Yeah. I guess that's fair. Like, he's probably not. Like, Christian Bale, is he too old?
Too old. Gen X.
Okay.
Yeah, Anne Hathaway is as old as you're going to get. Jake Gyllenhaal. Ryan Reynolds is not a tier one actor, I don't think. I think Cillian Murphy is 46, so he's just 47. So he's
I love Cillian Murphy, man. He's good.
Cillian Murphy. Yeah, Cillian Murphy.
Yeah. How do we get here? This is awesome.
I don't know, y'all. I think it's Emma Stone.
That's a great pick. Oh, Jonah Hill. Jonah Hill's a good pick.
He's really good.
Jonah Hill.
I don't think he's investing in World Talks.
Yeah, like he's, yeah, definitely.
He's probably in Kyrie Talks or something like that.
He probably is. Oh, man.
Anne Hathaway is like, she's probably in like LeBron, like Steph Curry Talks. Like, her peak was insane, but I don't know if she has a longevity.
You know what? It's a good question. You are as well read on these topics and as these variety of topics as I've ever seen, man. Like, I can't keep up with you on this. Like, this is, I watch a lot of things, like, and I but I can't pull names the way that you can. Like,
bro, I can do politics, I can do movies, I can do music. The whole Drake Future, Metro.
Yeah, Boomin, that shit. I've got no idea.
Kate Ott fiasco and all that stuff that's happening right now. I'm locked in, bro, but Saoirse's another one as well. I don't know if y'all know who,
Saoirse Ronan. That's Little Women.
She is. Oh my God. Oh, I think she is so amazing, bro. She played in she has a lot of flexibility to her game as well. Some really, really, really good movies. Lady Bird was incredible. Three Little Women is incredible. Oh, the guy from Fantastic Beasts.
Eddie Redmayne.
Yes, another great one. And by the way, so his two best movies, by the way, if you haven't seen them, Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them, Ryan Blackburn. Have you ever seen The Danish Girl?
No, but I've heard of it. I heard it was great.
Bro, this week, go watch
it. Is that my homework? Homework for
go watch The Danish Girl. Okay. It is such a powerful movie. And I think that he's also in that convo. I think he was in Best Actor in the World Talks when that movie came out. But I'm saying Emma Stone just won one again for a movie. I think Lily Gladstone should have won the Oscar for this year for what she did in Killers of the Flower Moon. But just from a pure worthy actress standpoint, I mean, Emma Stone is just like, her bag is deep. Her bag is deep from comedy, La La Land, like deep romantic drama, thriller stuff. Yeah. Yeah. It's just incredible.
She's great, man. Like, I'll stick with Sydney Sweeney for anything but you. Just kidding.
Sydney Sweeney's Gen Y?
No, she's a Gen Z.
Oh, sorry, Gen Z. Yeah, Sydney Sweeney.
Yeah, she's
you think she's that great of an actress?
No.
Oh, she's cool. I mean, I like
she's
her.
Good. She's good. Like, she's good. Yeah. But she's like Zendaya is even. Like, she's just, they're different categories. Different categories.
I mean, Zendaya, how old is Zendaya? She's 27, 96, yeah, she's but she's like also last year millennial.
Yeah.
I'm trying to, are you a Star Wars fan?
Enough that I could know what you're talking about.
Well, do you see The Acolyte's coming out? Yeah, and Amanda Stanberg is playing The Acolyte, I believe. She's playing, if you know, there's a Sith direction that's coming out. And so she's going to be really good. But Amanda Stanberg's another one. She's 25. So she's an old Gen Z, but she's also another one that's good. I think she can have some up and coming movies. But I don't know, man. I thought about this yesterday. I was talking to my boys about it. I just think Emma Stone, y'all. It's just, I think she's like that.
I think Chalamet's coming up. Like, what he's doing as Paul Atreides is going to be, like, it's going to propel. Like, I mean, he's already got an amazing filmography.
Walker, yeah.
Like, he could, like, he's going to be that dude. Like, he's going to be the next, like, Brad Pitt and whatnot.
Well, Brad never, so he has Wonka, Dune, Call Me By Your Name, and Little Women, and Interstellar.
Yeah.
He's been in some really good movies. And Interstellar is a funny one. He didn't think he was going to get a part. He played Matthew McConaughey's child, his youngest son, in that with Jessica Chastain. And so this all started because happy birthday, Jessica Chastain. But I just, I think she's also incredibly talented.
We should do more of these freestyle segments. Just like, let's just have some fun with it.
I'm not going to hold you. Jessica Chastain's 47 years old. I'm 33. That's not too big of a difference. It's enough to where, like,
not as big as Aaron Tyler Johnson. You know, he's the one who's going to play the new Bond.
Yeah, but who's he with? Is he dating somebody?
Oh, he's with, oh gosh, she's older. She's like he's like 28 and she's like 40 something.
Aaron Tyler Johnson. Taylor.
Or is it Taylor? Oh shit.
Yeah. Yeah, we're the same age. She's from England. He's married to Sam Johnson. She's 57.
Yeah. That's a gap.
And they have two children together.
And good for them.
Well, yeah. He's in love. That's a great opportunity, man. Playing James Bond is iconic. You're locked in for, is he's 33? He's locked in for the next 15 years in that position. That's good money,
man. That's gonna be fun. I love what he did with Bullet Train.
Oh, Bullet Train was really, really
Bullet Train was so funny, man. I love that movie.
Yeah, I can do movies all day, bro. I can literally tap into that all day. I love movies. I'm about
should
to
we
watch
do a like during the off season. Should we do a film book club?
I told you, hey, everybody in the chat. I talked to Ryan about this. I want to do like a swipe a gang book club. We read through one big book, like a really good, deep book, and we can do like these like little Zoom episodes about it, YouTube episode reviews about it, and we could maybe even do film or something connected to book and film as well. I would love to spend a summer doing something like that. We need content and stuff, especially, bro. I mean, we can. I don't know if 715 people would be in here for that. But I would love to tap into that. I love that kind of stuff, bro.
Oh yeah, I'd be down. I'd be down to do it. I have like different tastes, I'm sure, than you do. But like, just in terms of like a lot of the books that I like to, just like, I like just like even, fantasy books and just like audiobooks, things like that.
Just even real quick. So, Less Innocent Blood Be Shed. It's about a French town. It's about a French town during the World War II that were harboring Jews that were on running away from Nazis. It's an incredible book. It's a true story.
Yeah.
At least Less Innocent Blood Be Shed. It's a great book. And then Brave New World. I'm sure some of y'all have read this when you're in school.
Yeah.
But they have a series on this as well that they finally put out. So that's even two books I think people could tap into. I got a lot of history books in here. I got a biography from World War II that I'm finishing. The War from Other Stun, Ta-Nehisi Coates, The Water Dance. I mean, I got C.S. Lewis books up here, a bunch of C.S. Lewis books that are up here, and I got a bunch of stuff, bro. I mean, just a litany of things. So I'm telling y'all, man, we can definitely make a lot of fun out of this.
It's a good idea. You've got the worldly traveler, worldly Renaissance man, swipe a cam.
Yes, sir.
It's all good, man.
Yes, sir. We ended one episode 2 weeks ago talking about ending the global climate crisis, and here we are today talking about books and movies.
Love it. Hey, it's good. Let's have fun with it. This has been fun. All right, everybody. Hey, I think that's probably gonna do it for this episode of Weekends with Swipa. really appreciate you for stopping by, folks. I'm sure that Murray will be fine. Like, I see some talk about him with the ankle. He's going to be okay. Like,
yeah, I think he's just off the Memphis game and then he's back next
year. Yeah, like, I mean, if he's not back, then it's because they're saving him for being as healthy as possible in the playoffs, and he'll be ready for the playoffs. So should be okay. Everybody, thank you so much for tuning into the show. Please leave a like and subscribe to the YouTube channel. If you've watched on Twitter or X, whatever you want to call it, let us know how you like that experience, if we should keep doing that more often. We're trying to experiment with some different stuff and do some different things. Thank you so much for tuning in. Like I said, we really appreciate y'all. We will talk to you guys next week.
The living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.